Well met, and welcome to episode 70, the Bill Shakespeare Project podcast for February 13th, 2011. For our blog and previous podcast episodes, check us out at thebillshakespeareproject.com. Greetings. This is Bill Walthall, and this week we continue our month-long discussion of Henry V with the rest of the plot. In other words, Acts 4 and 5. Then we'll finish up with our usual recap of this week's blog entries. When we left off at the end of Act 3, Henry and his army had invaded France, taken the city of Harfleur, and were marching, in a sick and emaciated state, on Calais. Act 4 begins with, as I'm sure you've guessed from the previous acts, another chorus. This one introducing us to the night before the climactic battle at Agincourt, with its creeping murmur and hum of either army. Henry, the royal captain of this ruined band, according to the chorus, visits all his host, bids them good morrow with a modest smile, and his presence allows his men to pluck comfort from his looks. This sounds great, but when we get to Act 4, Scene 1, and we see Henry in the camp, he has to remind his younger brother Gloucester, "'Tis true that we are in great danger. The greater, therefore, should our courage be." Well, so much for plucking comfort from his looks. While he sends his brothers and nobles to bed, he will stay awake, and with his bosom must debate a while. He takes a cloak from Sir Thomas Erpingham and heads into the camp to talk and listen to his soldiers. In disguise, he meets Pistol, and when he questions the status of the king, Pistol says, "The king's a bawcock, and a heart of gold, a lad of life, an imp of fame, of parents good, of fist most valiant. I kiss his dirty shoe, and from heartstring I love the lovely bully." The love he proclaims gives us reason to believe that he wasn't around to see the king refuse to pardon Bardolph, as some directors do, against the stage direction of Act 3, as he still holds a grudge against Fluellen, one that makes him want to knock Fluellen's leak about his pate. Pistol leaves, and Fluellen and Gower come on and go off, and Henry watches it all. Henry is still in disguise, kind of hard for his men to pluck comfort from his looks when he doesn't look like himself. He then happens upon a group of soldiers, and they discuss the merits of the campaign. Throughout the discussion with Pistol, and now this one, Henry walks a fine line between acting the role of the regular soldier and hinting at his true identity. He calls himself Harry Leroy to Pistol, a play on Leroy being the French word for king, and he tells Bates, "I think the king is but a man as I am." When Henry posits that the king's cause is just and his quarrel honorable, he meets some resistance from Bates and Williams, who claims that if his cause be wrong, our obedience to the king wipes the crime of it out of us. And thus begins a debate on the merits of free will and duty to the king, or, as Henry puts it, every subject's duty is the king's, but every subject's soul is his own. When the debate moves from duty to the question of Henry ransoming himself, the king states, "If I live to see it, I will never trust his word after." This causes an argument between the king and Williams, and they promise to quarrel when the war is over. When the soldiers leave and Henry is left alone, he moves from his dialogue in prose and returns to verse in a soliloquy in which he finds, finally, the true burden of kingship. While the subject's mind is vacant, the king's is filled with the knowledge that his decisions will decide the fate of his subjects. And now that he has those subjects in France, the night before what he feels will be the climactic battle, he prays to the God of battles, imploring him to steel his subjects' minds against the fear of greater numbers. He asks that on this day he not be punished for the usurping sin of his father. He has tried to make amends and promises, more will he do. And the scene ends with the breaking day. Scene 2 takes us to the French, up and ready for battle. Arrogant, they discuss their superfluous lackeys and peasants, and then they head to the fight. Scene 3 takes us back to the camp of the English, as the nobles discuss the horrible odds they are facing. 5-1. When Westmoreland wishes that they had more men, Henry overhears and disagrees. "If we are marked to die, we are enough to do our country loss, and if to live, the fewer men, the greater share of honor." and so begins the St. Crispin Day speech. We'll cover it in much more depth later in the month in the blog, but suffice to say, Henry goes as far as to say that he's willing to send any man home who doesn't want to die with them. And even if they die, they'll be remembered. He shall live this day and see old age, will yearly on the vigil feast his neighbors and say, tomorrow is St. Crispian. Then will he strip his sleeve and show his scars and say, these wounds I had on Crispin's day. Old men forget, yet all shall be forgot, but he'll remember with advantages. Glory, honor, remembrance, these are the things that matter, and now his band of brothers are ready to go into battle. Of course, before they can build on the momentum of that speech, Mountjoy returns with another request of surrender and ransom. This time, however, Henry is not as polite. I pray thee, bear my former answer back, bid them achieve me, then sell my bones. He then sends Mountjoy back and bids his soldiers march away to battle. Scene 4 is a weirdly comic scene on the battlefield in which Pistol captures a French soldier but cannot communicate with him until the boy arrives to translate. After the boy sends the prisoner away with Pistol, he tells us that not only Bardolph, but Nim too has been hanged. The boy knows the danger of war, as he needs to go back and guard the luggage of the camp. The French might have a good prey of us if he knew it. The short scene 5 takes us back to the crestfallen French. Their ranks have been broke, so much so that the Dauphin's only solution is to stab ourselves. Orléans has a better idea. We are enough yet living in the field to smother the English in our throngs. And the French go off once more to the field. In scene 6, we're there when Henry learns that his younger brother York has been killed, and Suffolk too. The French still won't leave the field, and when Henry hears a new alarm from the enemy, he assumes the French have reinforced their scattered men. He then gives an order that's unexpected to us as an audience. Then every soldier kill his prisoners. Give the word through. When we find Fluellen and Gower in scene 7, we find the boy's fears have been realized. There's not a boy left alive. And to Fluellen, this is an acceptable reason for Henry to hath caused every soldier to cut his prisoner's throat. This is an interesting juxtaposition of scenes. It would be nice to think that the reason the order was given was because of the killing of the boys. But that isn't the case. We've seen it. The scene then continues with a bizarre conversation between the two professional soldiers, comparing their king to Alexander the Great, who, Fluellen recounts, killed his best friend. When Gower disagrees, Fluellen reminds his comrade that Henry turned away the fat knight. The implication is clear, and not a surprise to us as an audience. Henry then arrives, and upon seeing the boy exclaims, "I was not angry since I came to France until this instant." Now he's upset? His brother's been killed. His former tavern mates, Bardolph and Nim, have been hanged. But it's only with the death of the boy that he becomes angry. Is that because the boy is the only one he can relate to? He sends a messenger to challenge the French still up on the hill, but before this can happen, Mountjoy comes yet again, but this time not for ransom, but so that they can book their dead. This means the battle is over, and it doesn't make any sense to Henry. Mountjoy has to explain it to him. The day is yours. As the counting of the dead on both sides take place, there is a pause for levity. Henry gives Fluellen his glove and tells him to find the man with the matching glove. That would be Williams from earlier in the act. Fluellen goes off looking for a fight, and Henry tells Warwick to follow him and make sure there be no harm between them. The eighth and final scene of Act 4 depicts the confrontation between Williams and Fluellen, and the king's intercession between the two. Henry ends up having Exeter fill the glove with crowns and give it to Williams. After this interlude, Mountjoy returns with the number of the dead. 10,000 French killed. On the other side, less than 30 Englishmen. There's only one way to explain it. O God, thy arm was here. Henry V could easily end there. The greatest military victory in English history would have been a great capstone for a history play. So why have an Act 5? We need it to link this play to the three parts of Henry VI, which means we need a Henry VI, a baby, and for that a marriage, and for that a wooing. So like every act before it, Act 5 begins with the chorus. Only this time, he's not wishing us to use our imagination or apologizing for the inadequacies of the stage. This time, he's here to explain why, to those who have not read the story, he's got to skip some things. Henry's return to England, fighting rebellion at home, then returning to France at the invitation of the king. But when the first scene begins, we're not in the French court, but in the English camp, where we find the antagonism between Llewellyn and Pistol, born of the Welshman's refusal to argue for Bardolph's pardon, come to its logical conclusion. Llewellyn beats Pistol and forces the man to eat some part of his leek. After Llewellyn has completely humiliated him, Pistol is left alone to tell us what is left for him. His wife is dead. Though he says, "My doll is dead," most critics believe that this is an error for "My Nell," Mistress Quickly's name from the second part. Pistol decides to return to England and turn to pimping, bawd, and stealing, and to tell people that these cudgeled scars that he's received from Llewellyn, he got in the Gallia War. The second and last, sort of, scene of the act and play takes us to the French court, where Henry and his followers meet with the French leaders, including the Queen and Princess Catherine. After a solemn discourse on peace by Burgundy, Henry says that France must buy that peace with full accord to all our just demands. King Charles is amenable, and Henry sends Exeter to work out the specifics, while Henry stays behind to speak with Catherine, as she is his capital demand. The vast remainder of this scene is the wooing of Catherine by Henry. He begins in verse, but when her response is in broken English, he moves to prose, as if verse would have been wasted on her. It's a charming scene, partially in French, partially in English. It's a perfect scene for a romantic comedy. So it fits, as we said that the history Henry V ended with the close of Act 4. This is a different play, one that softens his threatening character, humanizes his heroic legend. He woos her. "But Kate, dost thou understand thus much English? Canst thou love me?" He convinces her to marry. "England is thine, Ireland is thine, France is thine, and Henry Plantagenet is thine." He even convinces her to break custom and give him a premarital kiss. Nice custom, curtsy to great kings. The play ends with one last chorus, an epilogue this time, where he states that his all-unable pen has mangled the full course of history's glory. In this sonnet, the only chorus that takes this form, our narrator tells of the birth of Henry VI, whose state so many had the managing that they lost France and made his England bleed, a story which oft our stage hath shown in the first tetralogy. And the cycle is complete. And so is our plot synopsis. Now, if you've enjoyed this podcast, but you haven't been following along with our daily blog entries this week, you've missed out on subjects including Act 4, Battle Royale, Act 5, From War to Love, Sources, Hal Still the Actor, French Fops, and Reliable Narrator. So, if you want more in-depth discussions or just want a daily fix, check out the blog entries at thebillshakespeareproject.com or become a fan of our Facebook page. Now remember that the Facebook page is more for Shakespeare news and notes than daily discussions of our play of the month. Also, if you have any question or comment about this or any other Bill Shakespeare Project podcast or blog entry, you can always lob me an email at bill@thebillshakespeareproject.com. And of course, please join us again for our next podcast. We hope to see you then. You've been listening to the Bill Shakespeare Project podcast for February 13th, 2011. For our blog and previous podcast episodes, check us out at thebillshakespeareproject.com, and we shall see thee anon. Okay, so everybody's gone, right? This is the day before Valentine's Day. So you know what this is all about. Honey, Lisa, if you're listening to this in your classroom, remember, I love you more than life itself. Happy anniversary, baby. And here's to many more.